Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is the Wise Men Say podcast. Hello, I am Richard Easterbrook. Welcome to a very special episode today where we're going to take a little preview at the new Sunderland Till I Die series, which is released on Netflix on February the 13th, which is a Tuesday. And we've been lucky enough to speak to some of the movers and the shakers from the series, from the new series, just to whet your appetite a bit. Later on in the episode, we're speaking to Sunderland captain Luke O'Nine. But first up, me and Stephen caught up with Ben and Gabe Turner from production company Fullwell 73.
Well, I am delighted to say now that we are joined by Gabe and Ben Turner. They shouldn't need much introduction, really, to the majority of Sunderland fans, especially who have been following the journey of Sunderland Till I Die since the first series dropped a few years ago. But just in case we've got new listeners or new fans, because people listen to this around the world, believe it or not, guys, I will let you introduce yourself to our listeners to remind them, let's say, of who you are and what you're doing.
Right.
With this in particular.
We're brothers. We are two of the founding partners of Fullwell 73. We are obsessed and always have been with Sunderland Football Club, hence the name of our production company. And we are incredibly proud to be releasing Series 3 of Sunderland Till I Die, which is a labour of love for us, and we'll be out there in the wild very soon.
Do you feel like most people make that association straight away? Because it seems so obvious when you're a Sunderland fan, it's called Fullwell 73, but I bet actually it might be quite a generational divide on that front.
Oh, it's quite niche. It is a little bit niche. I mean, Sunderland fans do... I mean, it makes you feel old, doesn't it? Like the stadium, when you go to the stadium, I remember when it was new, the stadium was like, it's a little bit dog-eared now. It's like Roker Park was a hell of a long time ago. But, you know, we also have offices in LA and we work all around the world. And like I've often had to try and explain to people, it's easier now, obviously, but what Fullwell 73 was. We used to say Sunderland are a bit like the Cleveland Browns, but there's no draft to save them. And that kind of thing. But like nowadays, it's a bit easier to get it across.
We were actually looking at our listener data that we were just having a conversation on the podcast last week, and we actually 10% of our listeners are in America now, which is quite mad, because going back to those days you mentioned at Roker Park, you wouldn't have expected that, would you, for Sunderland to have that kind of reach?
No, but you guys, you're in the show. You're a key part of the show.
Season one, particularly, yeah.
Pipes. I think we bring those pipes back for episode one, don't we?
I think there might be. I don't know.
Not sure if we. I think we might bring your pipes back for episode one.
All right, I can't. We did. You did give us the offer to watch them, but we want to wait for everybody else and watch the full production of it. So we get the authentic experience. But we probably got you guys to thank for that. To be fair, getting a good bit more of a global audience now from that first series. So again, just before we get onto the series itself, just give our listeners a background, because they're probably going to be listening now. Thinking maybe not strong Macamac sense, so just remind everybody how you got into following Sunderland in the first place and what your early memories are.
So our family originate from up north. It's actually our grandma was one of 10. And Leo, who's the producer of the show, and Leo, who you might know, who was born up in Sunderland, his grandfather and my father, sorry, his grandfather and my grandmother were brother and sister. They were part of the 10. My family moved down here well, mine and Ben's family moved down here a generation earlier. But every time there was sort of a holiday, all the family would get together in Sunderland, and we would go up there. So when we started getting into football, my dad, who was a Sunderland fan himself, took us up to games, and we started to fall in love with football. And I would say in the early 80s, where we started to go, Ben remembers an Ipswich game in 82. I feel I sort of vaguely remember a derby in like 84, 85. And then we obviously went to the Milk Cup final when we lost to Norwich.
Well, the whole of that Milk Cup run, we were saying the other day, because a lot of those, if you remember, a lot of the games were in London. They put out Tottenham and Chelsea, I think, well, West Ham, or maybe West Ham was the FA Cup, but a lot of those games were in and around London, and away games were also quite a big deal for us.
And then there was 88 when we went up from what is now League One against Northampton. And we've got some, because in those days you didn't have camera phones, so you don't have pictures of most of the things that you did. But I remember my dad, he turned the downstairs toilet into a dark room. We took cameras up to the 88 final game against Northampton, the gates of Gabbiadini. We took photos, black and white photos, which we had developed. And there's a picture of me, Ben, and Leo in 88. And that's probably the first picture of us at games that we have. And then obviously since then, just as many games as we can whilst building a family and trying to persuade people that it was a worthwhile venture to go out from London for the entire day, come back at 3 o'clock in the morning and spend all of Saturday not with your wife, your girlfriend, kids, whoever.
But we were
What's
lucky
your time?
also. We were at university in the Peter Reid era, and both in Birmingham. So we get to a hell of a lot of games. That as soon as we basically were free to go, had a driving license and could go when we wanted. We were lucky that at the time of our life, we probably had the most time, and we're in a perfect position for probably the best years of our life as Sunderland fans.
It's definitely a condition that comes to with somebody who's obsessed with football, isn't it? Like this, I'm bringing this. It's part of my life with me as well. So maybe people who don't understand each other who don't get football is quite interesting.
I always remember watching the MTV Music Awards when Damon Albarn walked out to give an award with Alessandro Del Piero and tried to sign in for Chelsea. And for some, I don't know, I was quite young at the time and I probably had no idea we were going to do what we've ended up doing. But it really stuck with me, this idea of like, because Chelsea were not big then, this idea of like you telling people across the world in whatever job you did that they should come to your football club because it meant so much to you and your community. And I'd like to think we followed in Damon Albarn's footsteps by selling Sunderland across the world to various people.
Well, that was going to be ne my next question, because I know you've been doing stuff recently on the World Cup, so you're very current. And I'm going to ask you now if you've been trying to sell Sunderland any potential players across the globe. Who have you done a big sell to anybody?
Oh, we can't. I mean, like, as soon as we're in a room with any kind of decent footballer, we're trying to get him to Sunderland always.
There's basically no one we haven't tried to sign for Sunderland. There's not a player we haven't suggested.
They've generally laughed at us, but it definitely goes a long way when you meet someone in the football world, and they ask you who you support, and you tell them Sunderland. Like, you definitely get some respect from them, because you're clearly not in it for anything. You're not in it for the glory. You're in it because you love football, and people do respect that. They're not going to meet another United fan or Liverpool fan or whatever.
Well, we'll get onto the Sunderland Till I Die franchise, for want of a better word. And how was that going back to the start? How was that? How did that land compared to how you thought it would land in your mind? Because I think it's made such a difference. I mean, what's interesting is when you look at the guys who've taken over Wrexham, and you look at the origins of why they wanted to do this, and they relate that back to watching the program. So that's quite mad, isn't it?
Well, Ben should answer this because I actually wasn't involved in season one and two. I was with Jack Whitehall filming a show for YouTube, with him basically dicking around with European footballers to try and sell the Euros to a global audience. So whilst I was doing that, they were watching Sunderland implode. And at that point, I thought I was the lucky one because I was avoiding it all and they were having to relive it. Little did I know they were building a beautiful franchise that, as you said, really got out there. So I'll let Ben explain what was going on.
I think that we, I mean, I remember after we initially Netflix wanted a Premier League team, and we told them. Well, I remember talking to them about the fact, really, Leo sold it. I remember Leo telling them that, you don't want a mid-table club, and I think at the time Man City were about to do an all or nothing, and it's really difficult to get into like those clubs, and they demand a lot of control. We were like, we've been at Sunderland games, and sung many times over, we're by far the greatest team the world has ever seen, and had no idea by what metric that could possibly be true. Turns out that we are by far the greatest team the world has ever seen to make a TV show about. And that was the one thing we sort of felt quite strongly. And I remember saying to Netflix, don't worry about the fact they got relegated. Promotion's going to be amazing. Just wait and see. Promotion will be unbelievable. And obviously, it didn't go that way. But it was quite, initially, it was pretty tough because at that point, we'd only really made feature docs. We did Class 92, which is about Man United
I am
and
bold.
Beckham, Iron Bolt, and we bolted to the Olympics. And we knew how to do a feature doc that was quite contained. But just follow a club for a whole year. And have the edit going whilst there was a lot of logistical stuff that we didn't know. And obviously, as the club was imploding, they didn't really want to have us around that much. A lot of people were getting sacked in left, right, and centre. And I think actually I remember like one of the problems at the club was basically no one was taking responsibility on the pitch or off the pitch. So anyone they could sort of blame for being a problem, they would grab onto it. And there was definitely a couple of moments where some of the players and some of the staff within that were kind of looking towards us like we were a problem. The difference when we came back for season two was unbelievable. Even with the fans in season one, there's a moment where we were one of the away games. I can't remember which one it was, but they basically smashed the camera. There was, sometimes when it gets really aggy on the terraces, among the fans, they got like, and then they didn't know who we were or what we were doing, and they certainly didn't know we were all Sunderland fans. And it got like, and I remember going in with that same cameraman in series two, and it was like we were bloody heroes. It was unbelievable. And for us, having grown up in London, and just like to have done something for the club and to finally feel like we really belong, it was really magical. Because basically we all wanted to be footballers and play for Sunderland, didn't we? So like even like we've had a brilliant like career and it's really good fun what we do, it's quite a distant second to have played for, to have done something for that club that we love. So to have sat there during that second season and hear the opposition fans singing "We Saw You Crying" on Netflix, very special.
I was going to mention that, like.
Season three is like there's a gap between two and three, which is bigger than the gap between one and two. Obviously, you followed straight on. There's been a bit of a gap, and a lot of time has passed. How do you kind of bridge that gap to the viewers in the show itself?
We basically, it's interesting. We did, in that time, we sort of trod water a bit, didn't we? There was kind of a few seasons that kind of go in, sort of mold into each other, and we lose in the
Yeah,
playoffs. And
I had to look back at it last night because I didn't realize there was like two clear seasons in between, well, one clear season. It was
Yeah, we like
yeah,
lost to Lincoln in the playoff,
it
didn't
was
we?
just
Like
like yeah.
seven. No one wants to see that. So we're like, so we're just like, so you just sort of come back. You do come back in, and it's there's a bit of a kind of. It doesn't have like quite the Star Wars credit roll, but you do that kind of like
No,
all is not well in the galaxy.
it comes back. It comes. We can tell you, it comes back. It comes back in, and we've
That's
just been battered by Bolton. And I don't know if you remember that post-match Lee Johnson interview. And I think that's where you boys come in, because I think
Yes,
my
that's
memory
right.
might be
You're
wrong,
right.
but I think we start with Lee Johnson going, "I'm just really embarrassed about that. I don't really know what to do."
Sure.
And then one of you goes, "What you don't want to see your manager doing after you've just been back." Battered 5 or 6 nil by Bolton, is looking broken, like he's going to cry or something, like something like that. But basically, and that's how we start it. That's how we start.
Yeah, God, it's
Straight
such a,
off, straight off
it's,
the
oh, it's to bring back memory. I
bat.
remember being at that game. I think I left when they scored the fourth.
Yeah. Well, I
God.
mean, it's I think the reason why Sunderland Till I Die kind of works is because most people hate going to football. They love going to football on arrival. They hate going to football when they leave the ground. 90% of the time, you're demoed. And like everyone can relate to that because, like that's the reality for most teams outside of the top four. So, like we didn't do a season three. We're just watching the, kind of like a non-dramatic, just us losing games and not moving. Because it's not interesting. I guess it's only interesting if it's really big or really bad. And so I think that once promotion looked likely, it was like, right, let's
When,
actually celebrate these fans who we've watched struggle. And I think that like there's a big thing I learned through this was like I was always embarrassed to be in League One. Like, I remember when we went down in 88, we went straight back up, and it was like, thank
Yeah.
God for that. And I also remember when Keno got us up, and there was like no bus parade. And it was like, listen, we should be in the Premier League. There's no celebrating outside of that. And then we won the pizza trophy, right? With Gucci scoring that goal. And I was like, you know what? I'm happy we won it. I'm devastated I'm not there. I'm devastated COVID has robbed me of being at Wembley and watching us win. I've watched us lose there so many times.
Literally the most Sunderland thing in the
And I
whole
was
world.
like,
Yeah.
but it's win at Wembley. I didn't care that it was the Johnson's paint car. I was like, I'm devastated I'm not there. And I realized that like glory can be found not only by winning the Champions League, but because none of us really have access to that, glory is the odd day when it works, when you beat Newcastle, or when like it all went, or when Mark Poom comes up for a corner and scores, and the whole ground doesn't know what to do. Like, there's glory in football even when you're not winning the Champions League. And I took me a while to learn that as a fan, and I think I really learned that when I wasn't at
Yeah.
letting us watch the Papadels. So then when we got to that final, like obviously we were all there both times Charlton beat us, but when we got there against Wickham and we won, like there was it was profound, it was real glory. It would have been no more fun for me to have been at a Champions League winning final, I don't think, because in that moment I was with my son, my brother, my dad, my cousin, and we were the best team in the building, and that's all that mattered. And I
Yeah.
think that like that's what Series 3 is, right? Series 1 and 2 was like, we all know what it's like to be shit and still go, and Season 3 is we can all get our moment in the sun. And it might not be away at Roma, but I tell you what, and there was nowhere in the world I'd rather be than that day than with my people in front of Wickham, watching Ross Stewart tuck it into the bottom corner, spin away, and the place go absolutely mental. And I remember on the final whistle, everyone starts singing "Wise Men Say," cuts to Quinny and Reedy in the crowd, and
Yeah.
I was done. I just was done, finished. And as I said, nowhere in the world I'd rather be. So I think that, yeah, season one and two relate to people, I think, because we all know what it's like to be shit at football. Season three, I think, should relate to everyone, which is you've all had your day. And it might be a derby win, it might be a shitty cup, but like you've had your day in football. And when you have your day, it doesn't matter where it is. If you're with your people and you've worked hard to get that day, you will drink it
How long would have you wait? How long were
in.
you prepared to wait for it? Because like this is the thing, isn't it? So, you know, it's the glorious failure of Sunderland. I mean, the first season wasn't anything glorious about that failure. But the second season, I guess it's like, you know, getting beat at in the Checker trade and then the playoffs, and you're getting so close and you're still falling short. But I guess you always wanted to round this off by some actual success. And it's like you've just said there, nobody wants to see us lose to Lincoln. So it
Yeah.
came quite relatively quickly. How long were you prepared to wait? Were you like, in 20 years' time, would have you just like, right, that's the moment.
Oh.
We've finally been
Oh
promoted.
yeah. We'd have waited it out just like you have to, right? You're not going anywhere. If we don't win another game for the next 20 years, it doesn't mean you're not going to be there in 20 years. And in terms of filmmaking, it was just when there's an opportunity to pick this back up, we'll
Yeah.
pick it back up. Some people might think we shot too early,
Yeah.
but like, you know, like maybe there's more glory in the years to come that are even better than beating Wickham at Wembley. But for me,
The alternative.
were you prepped for the go to so we playoff semi final last season? Were you prepped for that or not? Or would this have still ended where it ended?
No, we were talking to the club, and they were shooting some of it themselves. We weren't fully up and running at that point, but we were in touch about it. I mean, we went to Sheffield Wednesday as fans, and it was the greatest night. I mean, maybe it was better than the. I mean, when that goal went in, that doesn't happen to
Well,
us.
also when they got us and then the lights went down, and you remember the lights went down, there were
Yeah.
the yo-yo lights, and you were just like, not again, man, I
Yeah.
can't.
It's
Oh,
definitely, do you know what? That's a testament to it, because in previous years, the one consolation was this is going to make great television. Like, you'd have that a little bit in your mind. There was none of that. When those
no,
lights came out, I was like, oh
I
my
was just
God.
like, I can't. We were in Sheffield. I was like, I've got to drive home tonight. Number one. Number two, like, we're better than them. We're just better than them. We're a better team than them. We've got quality everywhere. Like, how are we not going to win this game? I don't get it. And then the lights went, and then they did us for a bit, and you were like, oh no, this is not going to be good. And then like it was the least Sunderland thing in the world when like Clarkie got the ball, just like whipped down the side, put it in, and Robert scored, and you were just like, oh
Almost,
shit.
I cannot explain how incredible it is to be in an edit suite and cut that. I basically, after the first two seasons of Sunderland, I could barely watch football until the Euros, actually, it was. because it was just like I just the football was dreadful and it was so painful. I was really scarred by it because you go there, you what you want to do when you get relegated is not think about football for a month or two and then come back for. But what I had to do was go into an edit suite and distill the pain so it was really comprehensible for everyone and as upsetting as possible. And I had to do that 2 years in a row, and it finished me. It was such a toll on me. I remember watching the Euros, like the couple of summers later, I was like, football can look like this. People are like passing and the ball comes back and it's moving across the pitch. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh yeah, it's supposed to be, there's a reason why people call it the beautiful game. But so it was like really like took a toll at putting it together. But I mean, cutting Sheffield Wednesday away, you know, that and just trying to get that as, you know, into shape as, you know.
That was a moment as a fan for me. Like, I think the Wigan game was a bit different this time, wasn't it? You can never be, you've just said there, Gabe, you watched Sunderland lose at Wembley so many times. There was something ironic about the time we put that right, nobody being allowed there to watch it. But I was at Hillsborough then as well. And like, the second that goal went in, I think everybody just thought that this is it, we will do it this time. There was something you can't really say why that, you can't really measure why that was the case.
Yeah, but only because none of us have ever seen us do that before, like concede late and then not collapse.
Yeah, but also I remember it's a really strong memory. We were at Wembley, and we scored with about 20 minutes to go, and just a beat before that, I remember we had a chat and we're like, not this, because they were just starting to push a little bit, and they were like, if we go into the last 10 minutes with this ball dinging around our box, we know what's going to happen. And then suddenly it came out.
Ross Stewart
gets on the end of it, and you were like, "Oh my fucking god, this is really going to happen," you know. And then that last 20 minutes was just
party time.
I had absolutely nothing. Yeah. I remember we were the kid, even with all our kids, and they're like shouting, "It's like just not now. Are you dying? If you're not dying, just leave me in peace.
No,
I need to just be here in this moment."
It was so special, and I actually felt like we were going to do it again. Like, you know, when Diallo scored at home. I was with my son. I was like, he whipped it in the top corner. I was like, oh my, I just felt like I was at Sheffield Wednesday. I was like, and then to this day, I believe if Danny Bart and Danny Ballard play against Luton, we beat them.
I agree.
But the only reason they beat us is because they just pumped balls into our box the whole time. We just didn't have one of them two. Even Adji, like just someone who could just get their head on, because that's all they did to us for the entire game. And we were away there as well. I don't forget stuff, but like, you know, like when they won, they all jumped on the pitch in front of us. Like, they were
awful.
You're about to get to the Premier League. What are you giving us?
You know, like, Londoners, Southerners, all the bloody
thing. Like, what are you doing focusing on us? You've just got to the playoff final. It's like the most incredible story. And all of your fans are facing us. Like, it's, you know, it really annoyed me that away at Luton.
Yeah, I agree on the defenders thing.
There's an alternative series three finale, which is the one of my experience, which was standing in Morrison's in Doxford Park as Ross Stewart fired in that second goal. That's where I was. Everyone else at Wembley.
I don't think
you captured it.
We're dragging up some trauma for Rick. Well, the rest of us are all joyful.
Why? Because you didn't get a ticket.
I could have got a ticket. It was my daughter's birthday that day, and a decision was taken not to go.
Who were the stakeholders in the decision? What was the process?
I think we know.
I can't say I was a stakeholder, but I was affected by the decision.
You were collateral.
Definitely collateral that day. Yeah. It didn't hurt up until about 2 minutes before kickoff when Sky were showing all of our fans just singing their hearts out, and I thought I could have made it there and back, and I could have still celebrated a birthday.
But you guys called it, because like Wise Men Say as a song was always a thing, but it's more a thing now than it's ever been. Don't you think? Like,
where fans are trying to do that, aren't they? I think trying to like really claim some representation. I'm almost like offended when I hear another side singer.
Totally. But that the best thing, the biggest achievement of our life is that we claimed Sunderland Till I Die for Sunderland. Because all football fans are singing.
and now it's ours. And I
Yeah.
hate generic football songs. I fucking hate it. We're good enough to have our own songs. We don't need that. And it always and now sometimes you'll go along and we'll be singing a song, it'll be amazing, and you're like, oh shit, that's one of the ones that everyone that's a generic song. But more than anything else, we claim Sunderland till I die for us. And I'm very proud of
Richard, can I just
that.
say to make you feel a tiny bit better?
Go on.
Well, not to be better, but I was at school. Remember the year that we played Newcastle at home at Roker and there were no fans allowed from them? So we went, my brother and sister went up with my dad. No, went up on their own on the train and were there for kickoff. And my mum wouldn't let me leave school early, so I had to leave at 4 o'clock. And I couldn't understand why. I was like, it's a random day, mum. She was like, militant, you're not leaving school. And because my dad was driving, there was no like leaving early. So I was trying for weeks with my dad. Dad, just get to school at 3 o'clock. No one will ever know. Right? Didn't do it. We turn up there. We walked into the stadium after Martin Scott had scored the penalty and watched in silence as Beardsley and Les Ferdinand, I think, scored two goals and celebrated them like talking to each other. You could hear them go, yes, yeah, because there was no fans.
Do you know what? I was on the we
So
were
I missed that.
we were on the Roker end for that one, and there was a Newcastle, like about a couple of Newcastle fans snuck in, and we won
Disappeared.
the penalty. I remember someone jumping up and, that's never a penalty, just lost, never a penalty, and everyone just put him under. Was that?
That was a weird
That was.
yeah, that was a weird memory, that game.
They were so much better than us in those. I mean, like, they were really, that
Oh.
was an excellent team.
But part of the reason why I was telling you that story about my mum was that sadly, my mum a couple of years ago and Ben's mum passed away. And in the, oh, you know, the opening sequence, you know, on the boat, it says Gillian.
Right,
So
on the seat opens.
Gillian was Leo's mum who passed away before season one.
Right.
And in this season, they've changed the titles a tiny bit to put a bench in there with mine and Ben's mum's name, Francis, on there. Yeah, and that's my dad. With her name Frances on there, and we were laughing the other day because basically both Gillian and Frances, my mum and Leo's mum, basically hated the fact that we were so obsessed with Sunderland and tried to get out early family gathering or put Sunderland before everything else. So the fact that they are forever immortalized in Sunderland Until I Die feels quite poetic. But in this
Yeah.
season, the bench is in there for our mum, like the boat was in there for Leo's mum. So it's a hugely important show for us, like in a
Yeah.
way, in a deep way that a lot of the other stuff that we do doesn't hit the same way.
Yeah. No, it's good. It is nice to see that. And obviously, I like going to personal stuff, but that final is sort of linked to something like that in my family as well, which makes it even more special. So, yeah, it's good that, because that's what it comes back to, family and community, isn't it? And I think you did get that across really well. I think season one in particular, not that you didn't in season two, but for understandable reasons, the attention was elsewhere on season two because of
Season two is just
some of that TV gold you were allowed to share with everybody. Like, why wouldn't you capitalize on that? And
such a
everybody knows what
difficult
we're talking
watch.
about. Well,
Season two is such a difficult watch anyway. Like still now, even though we're out of that, spoiler alert, we
yeah.
got promoted. It still hurts. I mean that day down at Wembley, the time I did go down, ironically, we lost, and you captured it. You guys captured it so well at the end of series two, and there's the lady in the crowd says, why is it never us celebrating? And it just like, if anything ever hit the nail on the head as well as it
Yeah,
did.
I think we did. And do you know what, as well? I remember like leaving that game, some of the Charlton fans, they not even looking like they were that happy about it. They were just like
Oh,
nonplussed
no.
about it almost.
And they went
And you're
straight
like,
back down. They didn't even, it weren't even ready for it. It was just, it was Lee Bowyer as well. Do you remember? It's just nothing about it was going to, you know what I
Yeah, well,
mean?
let's not dwell. We've all moved on. So, I mean, just finally, just want to like sort of give a little bit of a push towards a season three. What can people expect? It's a shortened series, isn't it? There's only three episodes, I believe. And what should people look forward to,
You
apart
can't
from the
drag out
obvious, of
joy.
course?
You can't drag out joy as long as you can drag out sorrow. So no, I think, yeah, look, it's watching those fans and those people work through some stuff and then get to really have their day in the sun, coupled with some quite sad personal
Well, yeah, the
stories.
end, there's a very bittersweet ending to it, which we'll leave out there. It's that you're always, you're at the mercy of events when you're making a documentary. And so
It didn't. Obviously, there's a huge amount of joy at the end, but there's a little bittersweet kick right in the final kind of the final bit of it, which will leave people to discover. But there's great joy in there, and you'll be and for Sunderland fans. I think everyone loves the show. This one's a treat for the Sunderland fans to enjoy it this time. Last I know, always all the mags that I know would love like would always be calling me up and I love the show. It's amazing, but maybe they won't enjoy it. Maybe they won't enjoy this one so much.
Yeah, no, I think it is good, and it does land. Actually, we had Steve Harmson recently. He was saying, "Isn't he good friends with one of you guys?" I think,
I know Steve, he's a great guy.
And he was saying how much he enjoyed it, and he was saying he always recommends it to his friends, even the new diehard Newcastle fans who don't like, who were like don't want anything to do with it. And he's like, "No, you should watch it. It really like captures like it's a Northeast thing and all this stuff." So he does fight that battle for us as well. Right,
That
what's been.
Wrexham one, you can see the parallels between obviously like
Well, yeah,
Wrexham's
because they've copied
heavily
him, mate. They were
influenced.
influenced
No, yeah,
by Ben and
yeah.
Gabe.
And the sections that they do kind of copy like and little tricks
They
here
won
to
five
that, but
Emmys for this. They
yeah.
picked up five Emmys.
Well,
But it's a
we all
storyteller,
know the
so
origin. We
it's the
all know the
same in the
origin.
Sunderland one.
Yeah.
Should Wrexham fans be thanking you guys then?
Yes, I think
Ten,
so.
like, in a kind of a roundabout way.
Just if they could just give us 3 points the next time we come across them in a league game,
Yeah,
that'll
that'll do
be
it.
that'll do it.
Hopefully
Gentlemen's
that's enough for
agreement,
a
that'll
while.
do it.
Hopefully that's enough for a while. It's been a pleasure having you on, guys. I know it's been a few years since we've last spoke. So
Yeah.
I'm sure
Thanks, guys.
everybody's going to be looking to the season three. You got the date off the top of your head? Is it 15th or something? Or have I just completely made that
Perfect. I
up?
think it's the 13th. I think
Yeah,
it's 13th.
13th. 13th.
I think it's next
15th.
week.
15th's my daughter's birthday. I think that's why I've just said that. Just
Don't
embedded in my mind. But I
make
wouldn't.
any
I would. You
plans
know
for
what? I wouldn't miss a Wembley game for it. That's for sure.
it. Can
All
we
right.
not? How old is your daughter?
Well, mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 16 now, and she's a massive Sunderland fan. Like it's over the last 2 years, completely, massively behind them now. So it wouldn't have been a decision to make, you know, back in if it was
14,
now.
it was.
Yeah, just she wasn't really that
Sorry about
interested, but overnight it's changed. Well,
that.
overnight, two
Yeah,
years.
I'm sorry about that. Well,
It's fine. If we get there this year, she'll be leading the way.
there's a bittersweet
Well, you
ending
should
this
actually
now as well.
say, if we get there this year, you should just say, look, I'm really sorry, but it's my, it's my,
Yeah.
you can't make it because it's my, kind of
It's a
game
big
as well.
shopping day in Morrison's for me.
Yeah, just say, listen, you've got to feel what this is like from the other side.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on, guys, and hopefully we'll speak again sometime.
Cheers.
Absolutely. Take care.
Take
See you
care.
soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I'm delighted to be joined by one of the stars of the latest series of Sunderland Till I Die. It's Sunderland captain Luke O'Nine. Hi, Luke. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all good. Yeah, you're here talking about the new series. Have you had an opportunity to see it yet?
I have not. We've got the premiere Monday. I've heard snippets and a little bit nervous of what they're, because we obviously did quite, there was a lot of filming throughout the season, so we don't know what's been selected. So have you seen it?
No, a lot of I know a lot of
a lot of media have been given access to it, but I really want to see it when it drops. I'm old school in that respect, as old school as Netflix can be, but I want to kind of preserve that moment. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm looking forward to it. No spoilers, please, because I don't know how the season finished.
Haven't seen it myself, so but I've got a guess on how it ends. But I'm looking forward to seeing it as well. So time will tell how it goes down.
Like, how comfortable are you watching yourself on television? Is it something, because you've had to get used to it from series two? Is it still a bit weird?
I haven't seen series two.
I haven't seen it.
No spoiler. I've seen snippets because someone told me I cut my head open and it really hurt. So I watched that back to see how bad it actually was. And apart from that, I know how it ended. So
yeah,
the ending was still fresh when it came out, and I didn't want to relive that. And so I've seen snippets from season two, but I haven't sat there and watched myself. I couldn't put myself through listening to myself. It's a little bit cringy watching yourself back. But now knowing that the third season has a good ending, I could probably go back now and watch it knowing what happens. But I think my little girl's now into, my little girl's big into football, so she likes a lot of my team, like teammates. She sees them every week, so she'll probably be tuning in as well, watching it.
How's it going to be as a family when you log into that your family Netflix account and you just see your face staring out as one of the featured things to watch? Will that get any easier?
Well, it probably trumps seeing Bluey, because that's on our house 24/7. So it might be nice for a little switch up and not hearing the theme tune to Bluey and Peppa Pig. So maybe my little girl might watch that, but time will tell.
So you joined at the start of season two, the filming for season two. What was your reaction coming in from Wycombe Wanderers and coming into the club and kind of having literally the spotlight shining on you as a group of players?
So I can remember when I turned up to the stadium for signing, there was a camera there, and I had to I introduced myself, and they're like, "Oh, we're from Netflix." And I didn't really get why they were there at the time. Yeah. They were like, "Oh, we're doing a documentary." And I was like, "Okay," because I didn't really watch many football documentaries. And then based off having that conversation, I went back to my hotel room and watched season one just to get a feel for the area and get just a bit of inside information. And that was my first connection to Sunderland Till I Die. And then obviously fast forward season two, I was in it. So yeah, I've seen season one, didn't see season two, and season three is about to come out. So I'll let my wife and my little girl dictate whether we watch that or not. But I'm at the premiere, so I'll be watching the little snippets from earlier on in the premiere.
Yeah, you won't have a choice to watch it because it'll be on the screen. So you won't be like one of those stars that turns up to premieres for 10 minutes and goes home straight away.
No, I'll be there. I've been, Oscar's promised me some popcorn. So I'll be there. And my wife, I think, is going to come down too. So yeah, we'll be there.
Oh, I don't have to go.
Do you know? Oh, yeah.
When you've got players joining the club now, do they kind of cite Sunderland Till I Die as a driver for them coming, or does it give them like a great introduction to the club?
I think it's all individualized to what people like and watch. I've never people don't join the club and like, "Oh, did you watch me on Sunderland Till I Die too?" I know. It's not something that comes out of your mouth. It's I think it's more preference. I watched it season one just to get a feel for the area and understand it, because people kept saying to me, "You'll never get Sunderland until you stayed here for a few years." Now I understand that. But I think it just helped me appreciate what Sunderland is and how much it means to the club. And just so when I did, start playing at Sunderland, it wasn't just a huge surprise. I was used to the passion. I was used to what people expected. I think what's amazing, it connects Sunderland to many, many people across the world. And then I know there's many people across the world that have flown to watch a game at Sunderland and become Sunderland fans because of it. So many reasons why the documentary is special, because it's an incredible moment in history that's captured in a documentary, which is quite unique. People can go back and watch that anytime, and that can trigger the emotions of what was a special season. It had every emotion in there possible. And for people to go back and watch that and relive it, I think it's going to be unique in many ways.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed with documentaries like Drive to Survive, the F1 documentary series, how that's kind of really kind of driving a popularity in F1. And do you think something like that could happen with Sunderland? That, you know, as you say, worldwide, there's people coming in from all corners of the globe, and the club have got, you know, the international fans there to kind of capitalize on that. You think it's definitely a good thing?
I think it's an amazing thing. I think to watch the documentary and to not at the end of it think, oh, I'd love to play for that club. I think you've got to be pretty deluded not to, because it's so unique in so many different ways. And there's thousands of fans that want to experience them, to experience that from a player's point of view. And to be in a player's point of view, I'm just so grateful. And that's why every single one of us gives everything, because we know anyone would swap to be in our position. So I think to watch the documentary and be like, God, that is possible. I think for kids growing up that are Sunderland fans, it can only inspire them to get there even more. I think for people across the world, it gives them a connection to us. I know so many people fall in love with the clubs just through watching it on the telly. So for the people that loved it from just watching the telly, wait till they actually get here and get to experience firsthand. It's something unique, and I talked about it earlier. It's like a drug. You experience it once and you just want to keep coming back for more. So hopefully that has the same impact like it did for me when I first joined the club, and for many people across the world too.
What's it like having your Sunderland career kind of been under the microscope, really, from the cameras? Has it changed any in the way that you've kind of conducted yourself around them, or do you just kind of crack on, not really notice the cameras have been there?
I think as footballers, you're under the microscope all the time. Whether it's, you know, it's your own self and your own self-critic wanting to do more. Whether it's your family or your kids. Whether it's, you know, the fans when you go on social media, you're under the microscope all the time. So I think it's just the usual, and you kind of just make it part of your everyday life and just get on with it.
So you're the most experienced, long-serving player at the club now with you know, 6 years.
Yes, I'm old. Just say I'm old. Okay, I've got it. I'm old.
you carry yourself in a very young, you know, young for your age. Like, how are you enjoying kind of this new role as, you know, as club captain and the elder statesman of the team and the longest-serving, experienced player?
Yeah, I correct you, I'm just captain while Corey's out injured. Corey's the captain of the club, and being able to step in while he's not there, I've loved it. I've loved this football club from, even though I didn't get off to the best start, it's been something that's just been great for me. You know, the young players we've got, the talent we've got, it's huge. And, you know, trying to knit that together, the experience, the youth, the talent, try to knit that all together day in, day out of a training ground. It's something where if we get that right into the last few games of the season, the potential's huge, and it's our job to get that all together and put that into the promotion push and get to the Premier League.
How good would that be, kind of having another crack at the Premier League? And, you know, the chances are the cameras could come back for that, and the story could be immortalised forever.
Yeah, I think my mum and dad will like it, because there's more games on the telly that they don't have to drive up to. So my mum and dad would be rooting for that. But yeah, it's something that I've been working on. It's been one of my goals since I've joined the club, and it's the goal for everyone in this building here. Everyone's striving to get there, and we won't stop till we do. And hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Great. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Luke. We're looking forward to seeing the series when it drops on February the 13th. Thanks again. And there we go then. That was Sunderland captain Luke O'Neill speaking to the Wise Men Say podcast, just previewing the Sunderland Till I Die Series 3, which drops on February the 13th, which, as you listen to it, will be tomorrow. Thanks again to Ben and Gabe Turner from Fullwell 73 for taking the time to speak to us earlier in the episode as well. And special thanks to Bryce Wilcock from Creo Communications for pulling all this together for us and allowing us to speak to the guys that were involved in the production of the new series of Sunderland Till I Die. Hope you enjoy the new series. We'll be back with another episode later on in the month just to review the series. If you can't wait for that, you can listen back to our episodes where we review
season one of Sunderland Till I Die in some depth, and we do a little bit of a shallow dive on series two when it was released way back in 2020 during the pandemic. So if you can't get enough of Sunderland Till I Die, we've got enough to keep you happy for the time being. Until then, thanks very much for listening.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.